paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yep, let's do this. Tim Hasselbeck every Wednesday at noon. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. How's quarantine life?
A lot of the same. But, getting after it. Pulled my hamstring yesterday, trying to work out with the kids a little bit.
Really?
Yep.
You got a wrap today?
No, I don't, but I probably should.
Before we get into draft stuff, just your reaction of the Jameis Winston deal in New Orleans for $1 million?
Yeah, I basically said a long time ago that I thought that Jameis Winston should sign a backup deal in Green Bay, prior to the draft. Like, sign a backup deal there because, he's 10 years younger than Aaron Rodgers. That's a guy that's aggressive with the football, but yet doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And, there clearly wasn't an opportunity for him as a starter somewhere. And so go back up Aaron. And by the way, with Aaron's injury history, you might end up playing a couple of games and it could literally be the Teddy Bridgewater, situation for a guy like Jameis Winston. So, that's really what I thought as soon as kind of things happen. I think, maybe he viewed himself as a starter for a while. The market dried up. But, to see that for a guy that's on the street, that threw for over 5,000 yards last year and 30 touchdowns, to have that be the deal, he's just kind of betting on himself, it looks like. And I think it's a good move on his part. But I'm surprised at, how little money he was guaranteed.
Is he banking on this being the last year of Drew Brees?
He may be. I think that there's probably a lot of people that feel that way. But, I think it's probably for him, yeah. He stays in a division that he's familiar with. He probably saw Teddy Bridgewater and the experience that he had in New Orleans. And, you just go look at, like everyone that thinks, Teddy Bridgewater is going to save the Carolina Panthers. Go look at, I don't think Teddy Bridgewater's thrown more than, 16 touchdowns in a season or something, or, in a passing league. And people are acting like, he somehow is, the answer at quarterback. So here's this guy that's actually, done a lot of good things, done a lot of bad things, but done a lot of good things as a quarterback, in the league. I think he probably looks at it like, look, if I get a chance to play here behind this, 40-something-year-old quarterback, then I'm going to play well and change the narrative on what people think about me. So, kind of in explaining, in talking to Jameis how I felt about the Packers drafting Jordan Love, I thought that was a horrible pick and for a bunch of reasons. And I think you could have saved yourself some money, some angst, some – could have also made your team a lot better after going 13-3 a year ago by signing Jameis Winston to a $2.5 million backup deal to Aaron Rodgers and draft a wide receiver in the first round, draft a tackle or a tight end, or do something, move back a little bit and take a tight end. So, I think it makes sense for Jameis. I think it's a great deal for the Saints.
So the Packers have obviously been discussed a lot. We got to know Matt LaFleur a little bit in his short stint here as the OC for the Titans. Where is this going, Tim? And here's what's interesting. Your employer putting out, I think it was on GetUp, and it's been on all the shows now. This is a real concerning problem if you're a Packers fan, because I think Tony Kornheiser is the one who said on Monday that got the – or Tuesday that – oh, the Packers, Aaron Rodgers should request a trade. Well, as we've seen what the dead money and what it looks like, the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are married for the next 2 years. There is no getting out of anything. So they're stuck with each other. How is this going to work?
Yeah, that's why I think this the whole thing was so dumb. I've heard people be like, oh, yeah, it makes sense. There's a couple things. Anyone that's related it to the Brett Favre, you know, Aaron Rodgers situation of, you know, Brett was a starter and then they drafted Aaron, they're totally different. Brett was talking about retiring every single year. He was never around in the off season. Like, you just didn't know. Plus, there were elements of how Brett was playing that made you feel like, well, you know, like most guys aren't going and playing in their 40s and playing well. Like, Brett kind of started the trend of 40-year-old quarterbacks playing well, and then Peyton did it, and Brady's doing it, and Breeze is doing it. So, like, it was a totally different scenario. People also need to remember, you know, Brett Favre's a starting quarterback. They go 10-6. They draft Aaron Rodgers, and they win four games the next year. Four. With Brett Favre as a starting quarterback. Four games. And Brett throws, like, 29 interceptions or something. Like, it was horrible. Absolutely horrible. And that ended poorly. And so I think you look at this situation for Aaron and the team drafting, you know, Jordan Love. You're exactly right. For the next 2 years, Aaron Rodgers is a starting quarterback. I think we would all agree, like, when you watch him play, I think he threw 26 touchdowns and four picks last year. They were 13-3. Like, when you watch him play, you think, yeah, any reasonable person is going to be like, Aaron Rodgers can easily be the starting quarterback for at least two more years in Green Bay, right? We agree on that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So now that means you, Aaron Rodgers may have an awesome season in 2 years. And then you basically, because you drafted this guy in the first round, either are going to sit a first rounder for 3 years in a row, or you are going to move one of the best quarterbacks in the game. Like, you have forced your hand that 3 years from now, that is exactly what you're going to be doing. And so if you trade off Aaron Rodgers because you need to see Jordan Love play, then, you know, we've all seen it's a lot easier to get worse at quarterback than it is to get better at quarterback. So you need to start with that. And then the other thing is this. You guys, everyone here in Nashville just lived it. How you needed 5 years to figure out if Marcus could play, right?
Well, some did.
Like, well, you know,
some
you
did.
Four, okay? But the reality is, like, you have 2 years to figure out if Jordan Love can play.
Yep. And he may not touch the field.
Then it's a wasted pick. And oh, by the way, you were 13-3 last year. And outside of Devontae Adams, you really had a bunch of young wide receivers that were trying to find their way with Alan Lazard and EQ Brown and all these guys, okay? And then you also get worse at tight end because Jimmy Graham moves on. Like, I think Aaron can kind of be abrasive and, you know, don't always love the way he handles things, but he should be furious.
That's why I'm saying, like, how are you going to make – and when, you know, now that all this stuff has come out where they have not spent – a first-round pick in 15 years he's been under center on getting him a wide receiver or a running back is mind-blowing. They've never spent a first-round pick on a wide receiver or running back since Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback? How does that make
any
sense at all?
Look around in general, like Aaron Jones, he may be a college free agent. I don't know where Aaron Jones, how he entered into the league, but it was not with a bunch of hoopla. And Aaron Jones, you know, around Aaron Rodgers, you know, was for part of the season last year playing like an MVP candidate.
Yep.
And, you know, Devontae Adams was a second-round pick. And so I think, you know, and he's turned into every bit as good as a first-rounder. But yeah, all these other guys are that have been the skill positions around him. You know, they have not invested in that. Now, they've invested a bunch on defense, and I think they needed to, you know, and they did through free agency and the draft. But and they've done a good job at tackle and all that. But, yeah, you need help. And, you know, I think at this stage to draft a quarterback in the first round in this – like, I'll give you a good example. A guy that I saw in person a couple times that – what to me was amazing is the Notre Dame receiver Chase Claypool. I mean, he literally is, in terms of size, speed, combination, like when you do some of the stuff from the combine, like he's the closest comp in many of these things to Calvin Johnson. But then when you watch him at Notre Dame, like he's a gunner on the punt team. He's you know, insanely productive. And then outside of the tight end at Notre Dame, there really wasn't like a complimentary guy. And so, like, to me, he would have been such a weapon, you know, alongside Davante Adams, that, like, I think would have really helped Green Bay this coming season. And he clearly was available.
I spoke to a scout yesterday who told me that he was just dumbfounded at their third-round pick, the tight end from Cincinnati. He said they felt like in their room he was a sixth-round grade at best, and the Packers took him in the third round, pick 94. I will say,
like, in terms of stuff, like, you never know how these guys, like, you know, in 2016 when Kevin Byard was drafted in the third round, you know, they're probably somebody, you know, like, oh, wow, third round for Kevin Byard, you know. He's outperformed that, like, crazy. Like, people weren't like, can you believe they got him only in the third round? Like, that wasn't the feeling. You know what I mean? So, look, the scout could be wrong. The Packers could be wrong. But I think one of the things that's, like, almost, like, not debatable is that, like, you're wasting the best years of Aaron Rodgers by drafting a quarterback in the first round after going 13-3 and being tied to him, as you said, Darren, with his contract the way they are.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck. And Tim, before we get back to the current, we have a job for somebody. You can run it up the flagpole at ESPN. There's probably some young, hungry people who are football people that would love to do this. We want to go back through all of the game film from we're going to start with the 1970s, and we're going to retroactively figure out who had all the sacks, because sacks were not an official stat until, I think, 1982.
Now, which means, clarify, guy like
Mean Joe Green,
we don't want to
had
do this.
No sacks in his career.
We want other
no,
people
we don't
to
want
do
to do
that.
This.
Yeah, we do
but
not
we,
want to
we feel like ESPN.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it.
You know, ESPN will figure out a way during this time where we have no, you know, we have no games to cover. We can go back and cover the games in the 70s. I think your dad would approve of that. He would be curious to know who had all the sacks for those Patriots teams that he played for, right?
I think it's a great, like, so whether it's like the Elias Sports Bureau or ESPN or you know, NFL, you know, research or whoever it is. I think it's a great idea. I mean, you think about it. Basically, every other American is doing projects that they thought they would never have the time to do. Like, I
exactly.
Power
yeah, my, we have the time. Let's take advantage of the time.
I power wash my driveway. Okay, I power wash my driveway. I've filled a dumpster. I've cleaned closets and donated clothes. Like, I've done things that, like, I was like, I'm never gonna have time to do this stuff. So, like, now's the perfect time. That was the absolute. I think it's a great observation and point by you. I think they need to get done. And by the way, like, just kind of while we're on that little tangent of doing things, like, if there's a project that you have had on a list, or you know your spouse has been asking you to do, and you don't do it during this time,
yeah,
then
you're
like you might as well just cross it off the list, because like you're never
it's never getting done.
They clean the basement and then it doesn't happen during this time. Like you might as well just submit your you know application to Hoarders and get on the show. Like I mean,
it's just not
in other words, it's never getting
Tim,
done.
It just will never get done. What's next for Cam Newton? Here as he sits there, and is there any scenario we were tossing this around the last couple of days? Does a Cam Newton Bill Belichick match? Is that possible? What would that be like?
I think it's possible. Look, he matched with Randy Moss, and they signed Chad Johnson, and they signed Tim Tebow, and you know they had Aaron Hernandez on their team for a while. They had you know Rob Gronkowski, who's you know, got other interests, you know, besides football. Like, there have been plenty of personalities and guys that kind of were doing things their own way that, you know, had stints in New England that were successful. So, like, is he a perfect match? Is he personality-wise what Belichick is, you know, looking for? No, he's not. I mean, Cam,
you know, they used to do these arrival shots in Carolina. Like when he'd pull up to the stadium, that they literally looked like a, you know, a music video. And, you know, I've always kind of said that, you know, what Cam wears on game day is they're not outfits, they're costumes. You know, I mean, he's different, and he's made a lot of money, and he seems distracted. All that being said, been league MVP, taking a team to a Super Bowl. I think he got like 56 or 58 rushing touchdowns in his career. Like, he is a really, really unique player. And if he is healthy, then, I mean, you're really hard to defend with him as your quarterback when he is healthy. So, like, to me, I think the best spot for Cam is to sign a team-friendly deal in New England and go win a bunch of games with the New England Patriots. Because there's all this talk about how, you know, the Patriots are happy with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer as their quarterbacks. Well, here's the deal, and I've known Brian Hoyer for a long time. They've cut Hoyer multiple times. When they traded Jimmy Garoppolo to the 49ers, Hoyer was on the Niners. He wasn't even part of the trade. They just waited for the Niners to cut him so they didn't have to assume his contract, and then they just signed him to a league minimum deal. Like, that's how New England thinks of Brian Hoyer. And as for Jarrett Stidham, and then you guys may remember, look, I thought he was a first-round caliber quarterback a year ago. I think there's immense potential in Jarrett Stidham. But this is the New England Patriots. They don't just give starting jobs away. That's not their style. And so to have somebody come in and compete for a job with Stidham, even if Stidham wins it, then Cam Newton, there probably isn't a better guy to do it than Cam. So I think that one makes a ton of sense. I've been saying it. I think it was kind of the same time that I was talking about Jameis to the Packers. I think Cam to New England makes all the sense in the world. And I think that New England is probably just, you know, letting the price tag go down for Cam Newton, as there's people that are unsure about his health. And so the longer that happens, I think the less expensive he is for the New England Patriots.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. Tim, how surprised were you that the Titans didn't address pass rush in the draft? And do you think that there's a correlation, that the correlation of that could be that they sign Jadeveon Clowney?
Well, I mean, I think there's definitely potential there. Obviously, you know, everyone's kind of, and I think rightfully so, I guess, that, you know, you try to connect the dots on relationships and past experiences. And because Vrabel, you know, is familiar with him, I think Clowney could make a bunch of sense. I mean, I for one think that Clowney is still a really good player and can play at a high level. I think that he's coming off a year with very little production in terms of sack totals, and I think that's hurt him a little bit. And, you know, based on probably what he's expecting to get when you look around, you know, I think there'll be some veteran pass rushers, you know, that are available. You know, I also think they're probably in a situation where, you know, they're kind of hoping that Harold Landry can be healthy and kind of, you know, elevate a little bit. Obviously they sign, you know, Vic Beasley as well. I think there's, you know, probably some natural pass rushing ability in Vic Beasley's game that maybe they feel like they can draw out of him. And so, yeah, I don't think they're done addressing it, but I also think that they probably feel like the guys they have also have some potential.
So what did you think about their draft class overall?
You know what? I think, you know, in many ways it makes sense. Like, I like the change of pace back. I think that's a good idea to address that, as, you know, moves have been made, you know, the running back position. I think, you know, like, to me, drafting quarterbacks late and giving them a chance to develop, you know, or compete and see what you have. Like, backup quarterback, like, I don't think is necessarily a position that they are done addressing. Like, I think you could easily see a veteran quarterback, you know, come on after getting cut maybe at the end of training camp or something like that. I'm not positive that they would go through the season in their current situation. So I think that makes sense. You know, I will say this only because you guys know, doing my college stuff in the ACC, you know, over the past few years, I've had NC State quite a bit. And, you know, I don't claim to be an expert on defensive tackles. But Larrell Murchison, when we would go meet with NC State, anytime, you know, we sat down with Dave Dorn, the head coach, or their defensive coordinator, and we would say, hey, who's the leader on your team? And every time it was like, Murch, you know, he's the best. Like, there isn't a guy on our team that doesn't have all kinds of respect for Larrell Murchison. And so it's interesting. He's a guy that the coaches at NC State always had high praise for anytime I had their games.
Mm, interesting. Let's wrap up with this because I think we know your answer on who had the worst draft. You've already touched on that, or who did you not like? Who did you really like? Who's a team that really jumped out at you and you thought, you know what, you thought they nailed it for the draft?
You know what, I had a kind of a similar question on SportsCenter shortly after the draft. Two teams stick out to me, and you kind of get it. There's a theme of it for me. The Pittsburgh Steelers traded their first-round draft pick and ended up with one of the best safeties in the league, and they did it a year ago, you know, and so in Minkah Fitzpatrick. So, you know, they get Minkah Fitzpatrick, and then they draft Chase Claypool. And like, so to me, with your first-round pick, they have, a 23-year-old player who is one of the best defensive players in the league. Like, you won the draft by the trade you made last season. And then the Indianapolis Colts are another one I think did a good job because – you know, they end up with DeForest Buckner. You know, they end up drafting a running back, which I think could end up being a starter for them, you know, at some point during the season. You know, they basically get DeForest Buckner, and then they have three guys that I think probably end up playing valuable roles for them, you know, early on. So I actually think both of those teams did a good job. And part of it is, and you guys know, it's like, you know, the NFL has done this amazing job of creating this environment of, you know, feeling like the draft is like the biggest thing. And, you know, you look back on it and look, in 2018, the Titans' fourth round pick was Luke Falk, you know, like in 2016, you know, Kevin Dodd and Austin Johnson are second round picks, you know, I think sometimes now they get right on, and listen, I'm not being critical because, you know, looking back at the Titans drafts basically from 2016 to now, they've hit on a bunch of players, and some of these guys they've hit on have been really, really good. I used Kevin Byard as the example a second ago, but like, you know, to me, I think these things are 50-50 at best unless your team really, really does a good job.
You brought up Indy. Did you like their fourth round pick in Jacob Eason or no?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. Like, here's the deal with Eason that I felt. He, in some ways, a little bit less athletic version of Justin Herbert. Like, he's got a huge arm. He's a pocket passer. He's, like, there are elements of Eason's game that I think are similar to Herbert's game. Herbert goes as the sixth overall pick. Now, he's not as athletic as Herbert. You know, he doesn't run as well. But, look, I think that we would all agree that it's a really temporary fix with Philip Rivers. And, you know, that's a situation like, hey, like, is there a guy that has some potential that you feel like maybe there's a shot with? And look, I'll use the example. If Luke Falk is a fourth round pick in 2018, then yeah, I'm totally fine with the Jacob Eason pick. And I'll tell you another one, like Jake Fromm. You know, I don't know how it ends up working out. I think Buffalo is a bad spot for him, but like that guy can play quarterback. Like you know, and who knows if it ends up working out for him. But when I watched him, like he's the guy that I felt like, you know what, like he'd come in if he had to play in 2 years, he'd come in and do a good job.
Interesting. You and the family continue to be safe. Thanks for joining us as always, and we'll talk next week.
Cool. Hey, stretch before you run with the kids, okay?
Yeah, we learned that, yeah.
Okay, and get to those projects.
Get to the pro- and if you could help us on our project, you've got a better pool.
I'll put some feelings out there.
Okay, good stuff. Thank you, Tim.
All right. See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. Great to chat with him every Wednesday at noon. We will come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck. We always enjoy our conversations every Wednesday with him. We know a lot of you are working from home during this pandemic, and you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app as an option. Enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can always live stream it from our website, thegamenashville.com, here on this Wednesday afternoon. We were talking about Jameis Winston's $1.1 million one-year deal with the Saints. Looks like there's about $3.5 million in incentives. So if he were to hit everything, the most he'd make is $4.5 million for this upcoming year with the New Orleans Saints. So pretty interesting deal there for Jameis Winston. We also got into the whole Cam Newton. Where does he end up? What happens on his front? But good stuff there from Tim Hasselbeck. And he liked the idea, guys, which we feel on this show is a solid idea. Now is the time for, he brought up Elias Sports, NFL Films, ESPN. Come together. Everybody come together. Let's go back and let's get some sack totals from other decades, right, when they weren't recording that stuff, and we can figure it out. It's got to be a way to do that.
Did it surprise you? Yeah, I think there is, too. I'm surprised somebody hasn't done it already. But did it surprise you that he thought that, because it's almost like, you know, it's the junior high dance or the middle school dance where everybody's got a dance partner and then there's two people looking at each other going, you don't have a dance partner. I don't have a dance partner. Maybe we should dance. It's like, so it's got to happen, right? Cam Newton's got to go to the Patriots. But there's something weird there. I guess it surprised me a little bit that Tim thought that can work. You know, that could be something that goes well.
Yeah.
Well, what other options do either one of them have? I mean, I guess the option for
that's,
the Patriots
that's the
is,
point.
Is Stidham. But, I mean, gosh, Cam Newton's proven. Stidham is not. So, I mean, they kind of both need each other. True?
Yeah, and Belichick said that, you know, not drafting a quarterback – that wasn't by design. I mean, they had the idea that they were going to draft a quarterback, but they just didn't get the right one. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Stidham is the plan moving forward. So I think it would – they'd figure out a way to make it work. I know you brought up yesterday that Brady's not there anymore, and so that was a lot of the success of bringing in some of these players that maybe don't make a lot of sense, but – I think Belichick could handle it. And if Cam Newton looks and sees what Jameis Winston's doing, I mean, that's going to change the market for him. I mean, he's not going to get what he has in his mind, and I have no idea what that number is. But if he wants to play, he's just going to have to not be as picky. Sign a one-year deal, go to New England. I mean, that's a good place to be, or he might end up being a backup somewhere or not playing.
Yeah, or there's that. I was just reading here on AL.com. Did you guys see this where the University of Alabama is planning to reopen for the fall? The quote, we fully expect to have on-campus instruction.
So they're ready to roll, full, huh?
They've been full steam ahead. Their governor, she has been going, we're going. I don't know who's advising her or what, but she...
This was, I think, from the chancellor from the university.
Yeah, I think Alabama's got their way of thinking, and they're going to go full steam ahead.
Well, obviously that opens up the door for everybody to say, oh, well, if they're going to be on campus in the fall, then they fully anticipate playing football in the fall and playing home games. But it's not that easy. I think as we've talked about, I don't think – they can go rogue on this, right? Aren't they all going to have to be in lockstep? Isn't everybody going to have to be on the same page? You can't have
one would think,
right? But also, how do you do that? I mean, we've already talked about this yesterday. Areas that have been hit harder. So in Louisiana, or New York, or in Massachusetts, or other places, so they can't be on the same page because there's different results. Every state has been different with all this, right? Some places, their numbers are completely different than other places. So how do you get everybody on the same page? And what, I mean, to me, it seems like if you're doing that, there's a reason. Although it's not just for football, but let's be honest, there's a big part of that. But I have seen where, have you guys seen this? I saw this yesterday, where there are people already coming out and saying that they're going to sue if they have to pay full price for fall admission if their classes are online, that it's not the same and they don't believe that they're getting the same education online that they just did here in the spring as in the fall. They said, if we have to pay full price, we're going to sue the school. You can't charge us full price.
I haven't thought come about on, that, man. But that's interesting.
I mean, it makes sense, but come on, man. Let's adjust. Let's just – is that really the most important thing? How about the idea of making the most of the situation?
If they're charging like $18,000.
I would hope that you can work this out.
It's a lot of money. Right?
I would hope that both – I would hope that the school could work something out with the people that is – where it doesn't come to that. We don't need to be suing over that. I understand. I mean, there is a difference, right? If there's not room and board and there's not all of that stuff.
Well, I don't even think it's about room and board. They're saying the experience is not the same. It's just not. It's when you're doing a Zoom call with a ton of people, they don't feel like they're getting the same education. There's no way that it's isolated.
What else do you want them to do?
Well, this just
you got to do the best you can.
College is expensive, and so there's a lot of people saying, I'm not interested in that price for what I'm getting. You don't think they have the right to say that?
Let's go down to the high school. Let's go down to the high school level. There are some high schools that are offering, private schools that are offering online classes as opposed to no school, which is what the public schools are forced to have to do.
And you don't think that there's going
to be
people
saying that? So you can make the same argument.
Sure, and you
don't think there's
people that
are going to do that? Of course there are, but I'm thankful that they have school. You know, and aren't sitting around doing nothing, which is the alternative.
I get it, but I'm just look, I'm the messenger, man. I'm just telling you that.
Listen, it would be a nice gesture to be proactive if you're a school saying, yes, I understand the times we're in. We're not able to offer everything that we offer you for this price. So here's what we're doing. But in the meantime, I think there's other things to bellyache about before you start talking about a lawsuit. It's one thing to say, hey, can we talk about this? You know, maybe we should have a discussion about this. What's fair here?
I think
here?
It's about getting people's
But to say
attention.
We're going
to
sue.
Right, because that's immediately gets your attention, and that's probably why they're doing it, right? It starts
the
discussion.
That's the way of the world.
I guess.
That's what people do all the time. They're like, hey, if you don't give me my way, I'm going to sue you.
Right, and so that gets people's attention, and now you have their ear, and now they perk up, and now they want to listen. It seems like some of the parameters are going to be that the classes will be smaller, right? And there'll be it's kind of going a little bit between a little bit of both. Maybe you have days where some days you're able to go to class, other days they want you to do it online, right? That's a way to kind of keep the classroom smaller. So obviously they're trying to think outside the box and think of ways that they can, you know, just like anything, come up with different rules.
Right.
Different way of
and we need to have a little time. We need to give them a little time to figure out what to do. Like a lecture hall at some classes that I had where I might or might not have brought the USA Today sports page or the Nashville Banner or the Tennessean or all three and had them, you know, up in the upper deck there. That's probably not the best class for a Zoom. There's too many people. There's 100 people in the class.
Uh-huh.
You can't have a Zoom with that many people, but there's probably some classes where the Zoom would have been fine, right?
Right. We know in certain classes and certain schools, right, it's a big, big class. And so that's, yeah. And I'm sure that's what people experienced. It was a little bit more challenging in the spring when they had to take those type of classes online. Usually it's the easier class when it's a big class. I know. I've found it.
Usually?
You like the big classes? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I like
guess
the
so.
Big classes.
I guess so.
Yeah, me too.
Let me tell you, there was no – you want to see me perk up when I walked into a class and I saw a lot of football and basketball players? I was like, yep, I picked the right class.
We good.
So right up my alley.
Look, there were times that I always looked at the class size and then the teacher – on the first day, and if, you know, if they were one, like if it was a smaller class and they were like, you got assigned seats, like we're still in middle school and just stuff like that, I usually was dropping that one and looking for something else. That was kind of my strategy.
I told you I talked to an NFL scout yesterday, and I said, do you, NFL scout means what? They're on college campuses all the time. And
yep.
But yet he works for an NFL team, and he said, I said, do you think there's going to be training camp, you know, NFL on time? And he said, he didn't know. He said, I'll tell you what, I think college football is much more in danger than the NFL season for the fall. And I said, yeah. You know, it kind of goes back to what we've been talking about. It's just there's a lot. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison. It's just they're not going to be able to operate the same as a pro league. And so there's much more different parameters that they're going to have to think about that we've already discussed this week and have been discussing that it's just not going to be the same. And so he said, I think college football is much more in danger than an NFL season. And I agree with that. The question is, They've got to have the season, and they got to figure out how to do it because of what we've talked about. Because if they don't have that season, which I don't think is even an option, I don't think any of us want to see what the fallout is of of college football season that doesn't happen after we've already had an NCAA tournament that didn't happen. And I just don't think we want to see what college athletics looks like after that smoke clears.
Yeah, it might be something that we're not able to come back from.
It's not a pretty sight. And so they're going to have to figure all of that out. But we'll come back. Chris Mason at 1 o'clock. We'll come back and close up hour number 3 of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. So along those lines, as we continue to talk about these leagues figuring out what's next, and there's been a lot of news kind of trickling out this week of things that are being tossed around. Willie, you kind of wanted to bring another one to the table, and we can discuss that before we get out of here.
Well, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty about the college season for football, and obviously that would trickle right on down the line to every sport, which would include basketball. And now, coupled with this new program that the NBA G League is offering, where basically you can get $500,000 to go play in the G League right out of high school now. It's an alternative to the one and done, right? And some of the top recruits have chosen to do this. In fact, there are a couple that have decommitted from playing college basketball to do this.
The 5-star point guard from UCLA is one of them.
Yeah. And so what I'm curious about is how much does the pandemic have to do with that, right? And just, well, I see myself as a one-year guy anyway. I'm not even sure if that league is going to be on. I got a better chance of playing and developing in the G League. And, oh, by the way, I do get paid. I wonder if it's a short-term view, or is this the beginning of a big trend that once we even get through this whole issue with COVID-19, that this will be what a lot of those guys choose to do rather than play the 1 year in college?
By the way, that was, you know, Mick Cronin's now at UCLA, and so that was a big commitment that Cronin got for, at UCLA, and he was supposed to be, you know, their guy, their point guard next season. In fact, the three guys that have said, I'm just going to go to the G League, these were big-time prospects, right? Big-time prospects. I think the other two guys, it was Jalen Green and Isaiah Todd were the other two kids that said, you know what, we're just going to the G League. And I don't know. It's a good question. Is this going to be a trend? I don't know.
I think it could be. And this was one thing that kind of came up with the XFL before it folded again. But, you know, would that be an option for some people? I even remember reading an article about Trevor Lawrence that they would change their eligibility rules so, you know, a player like him could go play for them early before the NFL. But I think it's interesting with the G League that there. I think there's a good chance that you're going to see more and more players do that, and that's because, you know, they feel like they're forced to have to go play a year, and if they can get paid, then they'll go that route.
So this was a really good discussion they had on the Get Up show. They had Jalen Rose talking about it. They had, I think, Jay Williams is in there talking about it. And I do think this is a really, really good discussion that you should have if you're one of these players, right? Because on the surface, $500,000 is like, hey, man, that's pretty good. $500,000
for an 18-year-old? Yeah.
For an 18-year-old, that sounds pretty good. Now, as Jalen Rose points out, about half of it is gone right off the top, the taxes and paying your agent, right? So now you're down to $250,000. You're 18. That money is not going to last you very long, even though you could probably buy a nice car, you know, et cetera. You're going to have some pretty good spending money. It's more than most 18-year-olds have for sure, and probably a lot more than you had when you were 17 or 16. That's all well and good. But long term, you're not going to make it or break it on that $500,000. And Jalen Rose makes a good point. The brand that you get when you play college basketball, forget about the education part of it, right, which is certainly worth something, right? There's a lot of value in that if you choose to go down that road and take advantage of it. There's value for being on a college campus, that environment, hopefully. But also just the brand that you build by being in the spotlight. All of your games are on TV. You're going to get tremendous exposure. And so people are going to know who you are when you go to the next level. Unless you are a total basketball junkie, you have no idea who these guys are. And when they're playing in the G League, you're certainly not going to know a whole lot about them. So there's a lot more to think about than just you get paid the $500,000. Although there will be some that's a much better option for them, because they just don't – the college thing is not for them. Jalen Rose was like, take the Fab Five. There were a couple of the Fab Five that absolutely would have taken the $500,000. They knew they were going on to the NBA. They were almost can't miss. He said Chris Webber and Juwan Howard fit that category. The other three, he said, I can speak for myself. My mom was going to make me go to college, and I wasn't ready to go to the NBA. And I benefited a lot from the experience at Michigan. So I do wonder where it's going over the next few years, because when you $500,000, you can make a living on that for 1 year. But where will you be in the next 4 or 5 years? That's going to be the question.
But who, I mean, what does that have to do with anything? You're already starting your professional career. It's a 1 year deal. You're 18. Nobody said it's a lifetime deal. I mean, you're not making anything in college. So how is that? It's 250 after everything. It's 250,000 more that you didn't have going to school for a year. That's the way some people are going to look at it. Who cares about the rest of your life? Well, you're now starting your professional career. It's up to you to make it or not. I mean, that was going to happen no matter what. I don't know what the downside is. It just simply comes
down to... You don't know what the downside is.
Yeah. What is the downside?
I can point to a lot of minor league baseball players that went out of high school, didn't go anywhere, and then they're 21 or 22 years old, released, no education, no money. You know, they spent all the money. Even guys who got a pretty big
signing bonus. That
doesn't
change no matter what. The college changes that? No, it doesn't change any of that.
Well, at least you come out of it with a college degree.
Who's getting a degree? They're going to school for a year.
Well, you're assuming that everybody... You're assuming that everybody in here is going to be a one and done. I don't know that that's a given.
We're talking about some of the top prospects in the country. These are one and doneers. They're not going to school for 4 years. These are one-and-done kids. The one is the number one prospect in the country. He's one-and-done.
I've seen some pretty high recruits fall flat on their face and not end up getting picked where they want to pick.
Isn't that the risk for just about any – well, maybe not anyone, but isn't that a big risk no matter what? I mean, you could be graded as a pretty high draft pick, go play a year or two and still not land where you thought. Who was the kid? There was a kid at Vanderbilt that was projected to go to be good, go high. He left a year early and I don't even think he got drafted. And I'm blanking on it. Was it Ogilvy? Is that right?
AJ Ogilvy?
Yeah. Wasn't he projected to go relatively high in the draft?
Well,
AJ Ogilvy? I mean,
he played for 3 years, I think.
Yeah, he played three. He played at Vanderbilt.
But didn't he go out early? Didn't he still have a year of eligibility?
Yeah, I think he did. And I think he ended up playing in Australia. I don't think he may still be playing in Australia for all I know, but we're talking about guys out of high school here making that call
right.
when they're 18. So, but they also, would you rather make the 500 grand? Okay, let's take the category you're talking about, Darren. The quote-unquote can't miss, right? Your odds are really, really good that you're going to get drafted in a year. Jalen Rose's point, which I think is an interesting one, it's a little bit outside the box. You're waiting another year to get the money. But the experience of playing 1 year and playing in college basketball, maybe winning a national championship or, you know, playing in a high-profile program where you're winning a lot of games, a lot of games are on TV, people know who you are, what is that worth? Like, what was that worth for Zion Williamson? Whereas, you know, he goes in, hits the ground running, he's got endorsements from day one because he played that year or two.
If he goes to the G League, he would have been there. He's a freak, and he was going to go number one overall, and the money was going to be there no matter what he did. G League or Duke.
The name recognition? You think we all would have known who he was for doing well in the G League?
Are you kidding me?
Have you ever watched the G League game?
Willie, in that world, that isn't changing anything. Nothing.
Have you ever watched the G League game?
No, it never will.
So you wouldn't have known who Zion Williamson was.
Well, guess what? I don't change anything. I don't change anything on the fortune of Zion Williamson, whether I watch the G League or not.
My point is, if you're gonna sign a deal, I've seen him on a commercial with a sports drink. I don't know which one it is, but he's doing that. Do you think anybody would have paid attention to his first game as a Pelican nearly as much had he not played for Duke? Do you think he would have signed that endorsement deal with that drink company as a rookie?
Before they had made him go to school, the ones like LeBron James, did it hurt LeBron James? He didn't go to school. First pick in the draft. So all the ones, Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett, all them, we never saw them in college. Did it hurt them?
Right. That's not an option anymore. You still can't do that.
Right.
Though.
Well, there's been plenty of kids
that
never had the college
pros.
Experience, and they went straight into the pros, and it didn't affect them whatsoever. And you're also painting the picture like it works out for everybody. What about the ones like Jared Pinkney, who came back and did the right thing, and we applauded him, and we thought it would help, and he just went undrafted? It hurt him. You don't think there's those stories too?
It happens. It happens every year.
Kids that come to school and they do the right thing and it ends up hurting them and they lose out money because of it. What about those?
I'm talking about the guys that are coming out. They have to make the decision. Am I going to the G League or am I going to major college basketball? That's the choice right now. It's not you don't have a choice of going straight to college anymore. I wish you had to choose to go to college for 2 years, but that looks like it's even further down the road now.
I wish they did too.
And here's the next part of it. This is another thing that's being discussed. With this carrot being dangled by the NBA, what will college basketball do? What will the NCAA do to try to counter?
Well, they just did it today.
Will this push them to the next step and say, hey, you know what, maybe this whole likeness thing, maybe this is the way to go. Allow the kids to
make
money
counter.
Off the likeness.
It just happened today. Now they're going to, you know what? You can make money off your name and your likeness.
They just decided it just like that. It's done. There's no vote. There's no committee. It's just all of a sudden it's happening.
Did I not just see that was today what they came out and said? That the NCAA is now going to let these student athletes make money off their name and their likeness?
Yeah, they've taken a big step towards allowing name, image, and likeness comparison for athletes.
Yeah, taken a big step. I mean, they've got to get it done.
I don't think it's a done deal, but it's heading in that direction.
Hey, come on. Especially
they're
going to
have to. They have
about,
no, they have no choice. Yeah,
exactly.
They have no choice. Otherwise,
they have to counter with something. Of course it's going to happen. They don't have any choice.
What's the trickle-down effect
about.
To other sports?
In what way?
Well, if you're going to do it for basketball, then what about football? What about women's sports? What about Don't you have to do it for all college athletes in every sport?
You have to do it across the board.
Yeah, of course. It's not going to be a one sport.
It's pretty complicated. That's pretty complicated if you're doing it just to try to keep the, you know, the 10 or 15 best basketball recruits in college for 1 year.
Yeah, every
year.
What's that value worth to the schools in the NCAA, that 1 year? That's just those 10, 15 players. What's it worth? How many millions of dollars is it worth to them? A lot.
Well, there's a lot of people that think this is the right thing to do anyway.
It's worth a ton of money.
Well, I think it is, but it also, you know, I hate the one and done. I mean, I've said that before. I'm with you guys, I think, 2 years at least, because that you can – I mean, college basketball is something that I've always been more of a fan of than the NBA. So if you make it 2 years and they're getting some money because of name, image, and likeness, then I think that's a fair – that's fair. If you want to set the rule with the NBA and get on the same page, and if a kid truly believes that they're good enough out of high school and – the scouts believe that they're good enough out of high school, then okay. But you got to make it almost an all or nothing thing, that if you go to college, you're committed for 2 years or whatever you decide on. Similar
to
baseball.
It ain't going that way, my man. It's going the other direction.
So the top governing body for the NCAA said today that it supports a proposal to allow college athletes to sign endorsement contracts and receive payment for other work, provided that the schools they attend are not involved in any of the payments. Now, you think about where that could go and all of the different shenanigans that could happen as a result of opening up that can of worms. But
they don't have a choice.
They don't have – you're right. You're right. They probably don't have a choice.
Well, they fought it all this time, and why do you think they're doing this now? You think this is a coincidence?
Jalen Rose, I just think Jalen Rose made some good points to me that I had not thought of, even for a top player, that there's a little bit more to think about than just taking the $500K. And because in the long term, that $500K doesn't go very far. And are you better off? Will you make more money in that 1 year long term by going to college? And he used Zion Williamson as an example. I thought it was an interesting argument.
It's always been and always will be to each his own. If you are someone who wants to go for the college experience, you are going to go no matter what. If you're somebody where it doesn't matter whatsoever to you, which there are plenty of those kids too, you're not going to go, period. You obviously enjoyed the college experience. That's great. There's plenty of people that
care less.
I think
it's a pretty
less.
Special experience playing college basketball.
And that's you.
The G League.
And that's you.
Well,
I've
played in the minor leagues
don't.
Of baseball. It's not much fanfare in that. And I don't
Willie,
think the G League
opinion.
Will ever get to a point.
That's your opinion.
I know.
That's not everybody's opinion. I mean, those two Florida teams that, you know, how many times have we talked about these players that, you know, it was a joke? Where were they in the spring when they knew they were leaving? They're nowhere to be found but on the basketball court. They didn't care. They weren't there for the experience. Ben Simmons, there's been a documentary on it. He basically said, I'm only here because I have to. I have no interest in being here. None. All I'm concentrating on is my pro career. He was just... It showed, right? He was just chewing up good oxygen at LSU. He did not want to be there. He had no interest whatsoever. And he went number one overall. I mean, it's to each his own. So you and a lot of people, it means the world to them, and that is great. And to a lot of people, it doesn't mean a hill of beans. And that's fine, too. To each his own. It's not for everybody. Either one. And so there's no wrong answer. It's the way I look at it. All right, we'll come back. Chris Mason. To start the fourth and final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.